Now, as Anne said, there are a lot of memorable moments, real highlights. The Kenneth Koch pseudo-assassination, Kenneth really thought he was being shot, by the way, was you don't forget a thing like that. I was sitting in the front row in the sanctuary. There used to be pews in there, and I was sitting in the front row, and that guy walked through here and came in there and put a gun up to Kenneth's head virtually and pulled the trigger. It was pretty scary. Kenneth had just read a line of his poem called To My Audience, and the line was, "To my audience of camel dung." And this guy, quote, shot him. Later, a few minutes later, Kenneth said, "Maybe I shouldn't have called my audience camel dung." as Anne mentioned, the Charles Reznikoff reading was absolutely wonderful to find, you know, find this gentleman who by that time was up in years and was more or less forgotten by the poetry world, and to have him, to find out he'd been writing poetry and self-publishing it all those years, to have him come down here to a huge and admiring audience and give a fabulous reading was really, really nice. Gregory Corso in the back of the sanctuary, taking off all his clothes and running up to the front and dancing around naked saying, "I don't look so bad, do I?"
That was a Michael McClure.
Was that what that was? Yeah, yeah. And and another truly extraordinary event. I mean, Gregory's taking his clothes off wasn't that extraordinary, but it was funny. But the Robert Lowell. Yeah, well, that was another thing too. But in the parish hall here one night, some of us who admired Edwin Denby's poetry, and in fact sort of forced him to publish it. We organized a reading here of admirers of Edwin's work, and Edwin himself would never ever read in public. He just wouldn't do it, and he was very modest about that. And the various people got up and read his work. The podium was over there at that time, and late in the program, for some reason I can't remember how it happened, Edwin came up and read one or two of his sonnets, and read them so beautifully, so perfectly. You made me want to kill him for not having read them to us before. But it was really an electrifying experience for me. And there are lots of others, too.
Yes, many, and over 16 years, it was a lot, and certainly a lot of individual readings. I thought I would share a low point. I'd worked on putting together a national literary tour, sort of linking five organizations like the Poetry Project together around the country, and that we would send poets to read in all those places, poets would make a little money, get a little more publicity, community outreach. I worked really hard on that. Erica Hunt helped me with that grant. Like, she was wonderful. And so we were going to get on a sort of pilot program, like, $225,000 to do it, and I lost the check when it came in, and I had to call the funder and say, "Well, I lost the check." That was a bad moment. but they funded us not only they sent another check, but they funded us for another 2 years to do it, so it wasn't so terrible. I think one of the more indelible things was how much I like coming to work here, that I got to work with terrific people. Thinking of, the early years and working with Kim Lyons and Leanne and then later Jillian and Joanne, it was great. And then, being able to call people and have substantive conversations about programming and the greatest thing, which is calling people and asking them to read and whether they could make it, whether, we weren't offering enough money, they were always glad to be called. And that was always a really fun thing to do. So I thought the symposiums were, I guess I did 10 of them. And they started off sort of like almost like as a celebratory fundraising thing and then gradually moved towards trying to push the vision of the project farther out, meaning to try and include more people, to develop our own arm of criticism that hopefully would be sort of different than the amount of academic criticism that was being generated at that point. People were very enamored with. And so they were good events, but also what I really liked was on the years when I really was onto it, getting all the people who were working here and then calling in, you know, other people to consult as well. And we would have these meetings and try and think about what, you know, what our biggest vision was of the current scene. And I know Charles North, you know, came up with the idea of having an annual series of state-of-the-art lectures where we invite different people to say what they thought is the leading edge at this point. And those are always good. And I you know, have lots of flashes of individual things that happened in those symposiums.
You know, I it seems like the worst question in the world to ask poets for one thing. You know, it's like it's really hard, the one most vivid experience. So I think, the curating was really fun. But I think there was always a way that each year, the first reading of the season was always very exciting. And one year I had Audre Lorde and Diane de Prima read together, which was just stunning and very really exciting. That was one of my favorite nights. The neighborhood changed so much. You know, there were tons of prostitutes on 11th Street and lots of homeless people in here. So the morning I walked into work and there were two guys, one black, one white, giving each other blowjobs on the steps as I was unlocking the door. And it was just one of the most jarring visual things I've ever, you know, it was just like I wasn't awake yet. It was just like I felt like I was sort of being assaulted by their sex and just didn't respond to it very well. But it was an amazing moment. When we got cut by the NEA, we had to go to the NEA, we had to go to a guide. They were basically taking down the category of literary center, like that a whole network of spaces were just being defunded, and the literature program was becoming individualized. So I went with people from Teachers and Writers and Just Buffalo and a few other spaces to hear what Frank Conroy and Heather McHugh and an array of people, Stanley Elkin, had to say about the Poetry Project, and it was astonishing. If you ever thought there was no split in the poetry world, it was you in that room. It was kind of like when I said that something like 60,000 people, or I can't remember how many people I said were. It was a number equivalent, like 6,000. When I said that many people used to have programs, I remember Stanley Elkin screaming, "Is this an arts project or a gymnasium?" And people, I remember Philip Levine saying, "You don't understand, writers are just lonely weirdos," meaning we don't like organizations, we don't like public spaces. Each one of them went around. I remember Heather McHugh telling me privately that she was all down for street theater and she really liked, you know, that kind of thing. And it was, and then Cynthia McDonald picked up the list of all the readings that had ever happened at the Poetry Project and just looked at us and said, "Who are these people?" You know, because we were that off the chart. So I had never really realized culturally what this institution represented or how outside of a certain canon, because I think, you know, again, I think institutions like the 92nd Street Y are where poets get canonized, you know, and something else happens here entirely. And I have to say the final most vivid experience when I talked about, making the artist board be the board of directors meant that I went into a board meeting one night and there had been a takeover. And basically I was being chastised and my salary was lowered and the project coordinator's salary was raised. And it was just presented as a coup. And I think two people on the board, Tim and Paul, who were have both since died of AIDS, were the only people who supported me. And it was just a nightmare. And I think people felt bad a few weeks later and they reversed it and said that I could stay, you know, because I was like, I can't stay under those conditions. And they changed their mind. But then that's how I left the job, which was actually really harrowing. It's wonderful to be in this room and to be able to talk about it publicly, because I had an amazing experience being the director, but there were some really ugly moments, and it was about power and structure and personalities, I think.
I would love to be able to follow up both of those examples, but I think we have about 5 minutes left for the last round, so this will be the speed round. I'm going to read Anselm's vivid response. My first summer, just a few weeks after taking the job, I was a basket case. wondering what possessed me to take on such a ridiculous endeavor. I wanted to relieve my anxiety by sweeping the office floor, but the floor was hopeless. The dust seemed to be made of tar and just stuck. Years and years of tarry dust around that hideous metal cabinet island in the middle of the room, which was disposed of eventually. Anyway, I needed to call somebody out of town to see if they'd come read for the standard $150, but the long distance had been shut off. Rooting around one of the desks, I found about a dozen checks that Ed and Maureen had forgotten to send out before they fled the premises in June. Of course, they hadn't been signed, and those two were out of town, and anyway, we'd already closed that bank account and switched banks, so I had no signatory power to sign them. Fuck. I hated this job already, and now I can't even call Bob Creeley or Banu to get them to come read. But with one bad decision, I managed to lift all of my anxiety about the job. I forged Ed's signature on the checks. Not difficult, he says, by the way, when the first name is only two letters and the penmanship is rather crisp, and sent them out. Something lifted. I could make a surface. It was practical. Everything was spit and gravy after that. Thanks, Anselm. The last question. Last season, attendance at readings was over 6,000. Why do you think people come to the projects? What are they or we looking for that isn't found at the many other venues for readings?
This is actually a terrific book in terms of a lot of people's commentary at the end and about their first experiences with the project, and too much to quote here. But I thought I'd read a little bit from Allen Ginsberg's introduction, and because it sort of touches on this question, and I think it continues, this kind of thing continues. And just also to mention, Edwin Demby also spoke of how what we were doing over the years here was cultivating ways of listening to poetry, and he could hear poetry in this occasion and in this instance in ways that he could never have heard it. And also there was a kind of oral, when we began everything, we were thinking of project. I remember this conversation with Joel out of Olson's sense of projective verse and so on. But the idea of projecting the voice forward, the orality and of just hearing the words out loud. But here's Allen on, I think, touching on this idea of community. He talks about the Monday night readings open and the Wednesday night readings for those bardic soapbox stars of their own romance. Those are the Wednesday night readings. On New Year's Day readings, everybody in the community would come out, perhaps 200 or 300 people, to do a 1, 2, 3, or 4 minute shot, maybe the most intense perception of the year, or the one piece they'd prepared and they could show off to the entire community. And that would include everybody from John Cage up to Grandmaster Xylophone. Yoko Ono came once completely dressed in white and breathed into the microphone with her formula in awe of the air, a piece mostly of silence. The audience was and is a regular community, unlike those at university readings. This audience had been going to the same place to hear readers for 10, 20 years, so accumulated much granny wisdom about poetry, familiarity, and gossip. The audience, totally attuned, might know prior work from prior readings. Let's say Robert Creeley comes and reads a special poem dedicated to René Ricard, or I read an epilogue to Kaddish in the form of White Shroud. Hearers know these texts resonate with old history because everyone's familiar with earlier texts and styles. I mean, I don't know that still goes on in quite the same way, but that was certainly my experience in the early years. And there was also the occasion of trying out new work. This would be the place where you'd come and read your new work, even if it wasn't finished yet. And a lot of the notes in the back of this book, I don't even know if this is still in print, but talk about that. You know, Burroughs even talks about being able to give this big reading coming back to New York, and how that led to more performances and led to a sense of being able to do that, actually read his work, and it provided him with a livelihood. And then, you know, a lot of the other people coming, whether it was the big names like Snyder and so on, also talked about this, a different kind of occasion from reading at a straighter place and a more of an institution, the Y or the various university readings that were quite becoming more available and that sort of thing. So I guess that's what keeps me magnetized, you know, coming to hear the work and coming to hear because some people are repeating. I'm not sure what the rule here is about I think it's every 2 years, but there's a, you know, an ongoing, over all these decades, 45 years, it's just mind-blowing, the sense of that continuity with people and their body of work.
Uh-oh.
You're next.
Oh, I have to say something.